Welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Lovely to be with you this afternoon. Christine Stephen says, go Stephen Jacoby on language learning. From Christine, who was in his master's German class at the University in 1982.
Well, there you go.
There you have
Doug.
It. Yeah. And look, a volume of response regarding possums, but just a couple here. Possum and chimney, try J's fluid or other ammonia-based solution. Soak a rag and stuff in chimney.
I'm writing this down.
Says Rob. Another one says, Joe, get a torch, an open cover you have made, shine torch so as to freeze it, aka headlights effect, throw a large net over the hopefully live possum, otherwise put water down chimney, having rigged up a trap inside that it can run into. So there's many responses on that, but I do believe someone's rung and you've got a number now, do you?
Yes, I'm calling Jack.
Good on you. Okay.
Thank you, Jack.
You're a hero.
And
thank you for your possum stories. Today we talk about the government's policy to make New Zealand's car fleet cleaner and greener. That's stalled. Greg Epps from the Motor Trade Association brings us up to speed on that. Fewer kids reading for fun, and parents are being encouraged to do what they can to foster a love of books in young kids. And it's understood that Hannah Tamaki is to appear on Dancing with the Stars. That normalises and mainstreams hate, says someone on social media. Today I'm with editor of NZ Gardener Joe McCarroll and managing director of Jacoby Consulting, business and trade commentator Stephen Jacoby. This first, though, hundreds have arrived at Parliament this afternoon, actually from 4pm, to celebrate RNZ Concert's 87th birthday. Included are musicians who will sing and play classical tunes for the gathered crowd. This, of course, after a proposal to gut the station and move it onto an AM frequency, AM-only frequency, to free up some FM airwaves for a youth station. RNZ has put those plans on hold. But organisers of today's bash say the future of the station is still uncertain, and they're hoping to show RNZ and the government how important concert is to them. And it's just kicked off, so we cross to Parliament now to RNZ reporter Jonathan Mitchell. Jonathan, welcome.
Good afternoon.
What's the mood like? What's the vibe?
Well, there's hundreds of people have arrived, Wallace, and more people are just arriving as we speak. You might be able to hear the cheers behind me. We've just had the official wire to welcome, but it's going to be a brilliant afternoon over the next hour and a half of musicians from around the country. There's a good cohort here. They've been practicing for the last half hour, and we're in for a bit of a treat.
So I understand it. It's a mix of speeches and music excerpts from classical symphonies or concertos or what have you.
Yeah, that's right. So Mozart's Lacrimosa is playing in just a few minutes. There'll be a number of choir performances as well. But as you mentioned, you have some speeches too, including from Wellington's Mayor Andy Foster. Arts and Culture Minister Grant Robertson will also be popping out from Parliament to give a speech, as well as the poet Bill Mannheim.
Right, OK. Have you had a chance to talk to people gathered about why they're there, Jonathan? And is it a smattering of ages?
Yeah, I would say there's a complete diversity of ages, Wallace. You know, families with young children, students are also here, young people from high schools playing this afternoon with their music, as well as a number of people that, you know, you'd class as RNZ concert audiences. But some of them even have Save RNZ Concert T-shirts on. There's also a number of billboards, but I would say the overall mood here is pretty jovial, and people are excited and looking forward to this afternoon.
All right, RNZ reporter Jonathan Mitchell there, who is at Parliament with this birthday bash come protest. Stephen Jacoby, what you thought of this issue. It was certainly a big issue in the last couple of weeks, wasn't it, media-wise?
Oh, very big issue. And Wallace, I have to tell you, I signed the petition. I also changed the photo on my Facebook page. How about that for activism? I think it's great that RNZ management has changed its mind on this issue, and it's a great example of people power, although my millennial children tell me actually it was an example of boomers just organising themselves to protect what they want. Anyway, let's not go there because that's a bit too much, especially around the dinner table. But anyway, but I just noticed your reporter saying the diversity of people around there in Wellington today. I think that was the point. This isn't just about oldies. It's not just about the elite. It's actually much more across New Zealand society. And that's a good thing.
I've actually got a friend who is a professional musician who is at the protest today, and she wrote very eloquently on her social media about being a young woman in Timaru, having no real music in the family, and listening to Concert FM as a young child, and it really leading her into a passion for music, which is now her professional career. And I'm extremely hopeful that there will be people power here. I don't think this is a station, you know, of a very small minority of people. I think it's listened to and enjoyed by a lot of people and a diverse range of people, because I am a Concert FM listener and I love classical music. Absolutely. And that's not something I'm saying because of what's happened here. I actively listen to classical music and really enjoy it. And I get angry when the suggestion is that it's, I mean, I'm a moderately middle-aged person, but, you know, I'm not a boomer. So it's not.
Well, this is what this is, you know, the Taxpayers Union put out a statement today saying, look, RNZ Concert, this is to both of you, is a nice to have, not a need to have. Its listeners should be, in their words, bloody grateful for funding for the station that wasn't cut entirely. The station already has 18 staff, so let's not feed the beast any further. What do you think of that, to both of you? Stephen, you first. They go on to say that every dollar spent on RNZ Concert is a dollar that can't be invested in pharmac, frontline policing or tax relief for struggling New Zealanders. Is it a nice to have?
Well, I think that RNZ Concert listeners are taxpayers, and they deserve also to have their place in the sun. And government is all about finding the balance between differing things that need to be invested in. But this is the heart of public radio. This is something that the market probably, that private enterprise probably wouldn't fund in quite the same way, as opposed to another youth station, which quite clearly they are prepared to fund. This is an example probably more of market failure and of the public broadcasting system coming in behind it, precisely for the benefit of taxpayers.
And I'm also really sick of this position that is a dollar that won't be spent on, you know, tax reform or the homeless crisis, because that is not how taxation works.
It's a dollar that won't be spent on a highly popular youth radio station, perhaps, like Triple J, which plays 65% homegrown music. Imagine what that would do to music infrastructure in Aotearoa.
I think it would be amazing to have a publicly funded youth station, but I don't think we have to have one or the other. And further to Stephen's earlier point, we must also see the value in investing in arts and culture. Those are important parts that speak to who we are as a nation.
All right. It's 14 past four. The panel, RNZ National. New legislation to regulate vaping will be introduced to Parliament today in an effort to balance helping smokers and at the same time not encouraging new users. Associate Health Minister Jenny Salisa said the bill was the most significant change to New Zealand's smoke-free laws since they were introduced 30 years ago. So, no sales to under 18-year-olds, no vaping or smokeless tobacco in smoke-free areas, and limited to general outlets, so for example dairies and service stations, to sell just three flavours, tobacco, mint, menthol. Says Ash NZ Director Deborah Hart, the rapid rise of smoke-free nicotine products, especially vaping, is the most disruptive influence on smoking in decades. These products are challenging the smoked tobacco stranglehold on the nicotine market. But they have been aggressively marketed. Catchy jingles, ads on dating apps, popular Instagram influencers and music festivals. The bill will receive its first reading in March, when it will then be referred to the Health Select Committee. With me first is Stephanie Eric, the General Manager of the National Tobacco Control Agency Service at Hāpai Te Hauora. Kia ora, Stephanie.
Kia ora, Wallace.
Yes, so what do you make of this? Do you welcome this bill?
Look, yes, we do, absolutely. We've been waiting for regulation for some time, and while we haven't had any regulation, you know, the industry has been able to just pretty much go wild with advertising and so forth. So it is important that we have some kind of rules around how we do things and how we, just sort of manage ourselves and manage vaping as it begins to grow in Aotearoa.
What significance will this have for Māori and Pacifica?
From our view, I think it's really important that we're able to offer another tool to stop smoking, because what we know for Māori and Pacific communities is that what we've currently had over the last few decades hasn't worked as well as it has for other community groups. So we've seen, there's a lot of anecdotal research out there, we've just sort of seen as being people in our communities, a lot of our whānau like to use vapes as a way to stop smoking or as another distraction away from whatever stresses is happening in their lives. And it's positive that we have it, that we have this, and that the regulations are here to help us keep it away from children, I guess.
Right. So, yeah, you see it as a way, a significant way that people can get off the cigarettes. Do you have an example for us, someone who actually has used, that you've worked alongside, you know, who has used vaping to, you know, get off the cigarettes, if you like?
It's really funny you asked me that question, because I was thinking about what I might share, and I'm not a practitioner per se, so I'm not out there in the community. But, you know, just being Pacific, my brother-in-law started vaping a few years ago. So, you know, this is a few years ago, so the vaping regulations have come in a little bit late, yes. But he said to me, look, you know, Steph, I just don't have time to go to a treatment clinic. I don't know anyone at the DHBs. I don't feel comfortable talking to a health professional. So I'm trying these, you know, vape. And at that time, I wasn't very familiar with it. And he began to explain how it worked for me. So I got to learn a lot about it as a non-vapor through my brother-in-law who successfully used it to stop smoking. Now, that's a great thing. That's just amazing. And he's a typical, you know, worker, Pacific Island guy, kids, you know, school drop-offs. He's busy. He doesn't have time to sit in a clinic. And he self-determined this for himself as a way to help himself stop smoking for his family. So he did it. But the funny thing is that my sister still sees it as something just as dangerous as smoking, which is actually not true.
So no, right.
What just, that taught
yeah.
me...
Just on a
we need more education around.
Yeah, just on a final point before we move on, because there was a lot of concern about vaping last year, wasn't there? Mainly out of the US, the Centers for Disease Control and Protection did investigate a cluster of pulmonary disease cases amongst users. So, are you concerned about what we don't know about vaping?
Well, absolutely, it's really important. But as part of the regulations, to set up a quality safety system around the product. So that's going to be extremely important for us here in Aotearoa, so that vaping has the ingredients that go into it that we're familiar with and that we know what's in there. And that's what regulation will bring to us, quality vapes, and also informing the community where to go get those quality vapes.
All right, great to have
you. We're all not going out buying it off the, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, no, good to have you on, Stephanie. That's Stephanie Eric, the General Manager of the National Tobacco Control Agency Service at Hāpai Te Hauora. To our panellists, Stephen Jacoby, what do you make of this issue? Do you support this bill as it stands?
Yes, I think I would support more regulations to be available to place controls on vaping, particularly for younger people. I mean, I'd rather people didn't smoke. I'd rather they didn't vape. I'd rather they didn't do drugs. I, however, want to continue to drink alcohol. But having said that, and acknowledge my, slightly conflicted position, so I think that we should be trying to find ways to control this because there does seem to be evidence, and we heard it from Stephanie, that it can be useful in stopping people from smoking and developing greater nicotine addiction. That's great. I hope there's a pathway out of vaping as well. And I wish people would stop vaping on the street so you walk through a cloud of smoke. But yes, I think this is probably a good move.
A cloud of fruity flavoured smoke. Mm. What do you think, Joe? I mean, does this strike a fair balance? Vaping made available to those who use it as a quit smoking tool and whilst not encouraging its use amongst non-smokers and teenagers, because that's a key thing, isn't it, as well?
Is not it being just another addictive product that is available? Yeah, look, I think it is actually quite surprising that this has so far been unregulated. And I know it's interesting to see the research that seems to suggest that people are using it as a pathway out of smoking and not starting vaping without having been smokers. But I'm a little uneasy, I suppose, at the vast amount of marketing collateral I see for vaping and vaping products, which does seem to me to be extremely targeted at young people. So I feel that sits pretty uneasily with me. And I wonder when you see products like that being advertised, it really strikes you that you don't see cigarettes being advertised now. And that's a good thing. That's helping reduce the rates of smoking in this country.
Mm. Someone says here, your guest should not be allowed to assert that vaping is not as dangerous as smoking tobacco. We don't know that yet. The research is not in. What is this, a free advertising platform for the vaping business? Well, just in response to that, because there has been a lot of work done on this. For example, here's one of many, but I'll just read one now. Dr. Natalie Walker, Associate Professor in Public Health, the National Institute for Health Innovation at the School of Population Health, also the Director for Centre for Addiction Research at the Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences, said we need e-cigarettes in context. First, they have been around for more than a decade with no indications of harm. Second, the recent US events appear to be acute. That is, they don't appear to be related to long-term vaping. Finally, in the US, 480,000 people die every year from smoking-related diseases. That's 1,300 deaths a day. It's a pity these deaths don't also make the world news. And that is Dr. Natalie Walker, the Director for Centre for Addiction Research at the University of Auckland, to allay your concerns here. 23 past four, the panel, NZ National. Well, since last Thursday, four people have drowned, including a seven-year-old boy, and the search continues for a teen who got caught up in a rip at Waihi on Friday. There was also a story about a toddler who was found floating on top of the family swimming pool mere moments after leaving her mother's side. She'd recovered from the ordeal 3 weeks ago, but her story prompted a call from a paramedic who's helped save her life for everyone to learn first aid. 78 people died in preventable drownings in New Zealand last year, 12 more than the year prior. With me now to kick off is Water Safety NZ Chief Executive Jonty Mills, who's with me now to talk about this. Jonty, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. To this first of this piece in the paper, and the one about the toddler floating in a pool that the family had not long before installed from the Herald, it's an extraordinary story, isn't it? But the critical thing here was that everything was in place, so she did actually manage to survive.
Yeah, and look, it's a great outcome in this situation. You know, sadly, we lose about six under five or toddlers each year in preventable situations, and we know that it takes less than a minute for a child to drown, and really that only foolproof solution for a toddler is that constant adult supervision. Now, we all know how easily we can be distracted and how quickly, once they're mobile, they can disappear. So in this situation, it's very fortunate we had a great outcome, and obviously the first aid response and the CPR response certainly helped that outcome.
Nonetheless, it was chilling, wasn't it? Because it was a harrowing story of, even though it was a good outcome, it was a harrowing reminder of just how easy things can go wrong. A toddler can lift up that latch; they're a lot cleverer than we think them to be. Next minute, that door's open. We hear a bit of a silence, and it's a real recipe for disaster.
Look, absolutely, and in the modern world we live in, we are really easily distracted, and we're seeing the advent of things like, you know, obviously devices and Facebook and things like that, and naturally toddlers are inquisitive, and naturally they're drawn to water, so there's that recipe, that combination of constant adult supervision or distraction, and then how quickly they can disappear, and as I said before, less than a minute for a child to drown.
Mm. I mean, most of these drownings happened at the beach. One was in the Whanganui River. Are things improving? Do you think we're being too complacent in open water? What more can we do?
Yeah, look, that's a really broad question, and it's a whole reflection, not just over the last 5 days, but over the summer and actually over the last few years. It reflects the complex nature of drowning in this country. It's just not one-dimensional. The numbers are representing a really wide range of ages and ethnicities and activities and water environments, but about 63% of all drownings happen across beaches and then offshore out beyond the waves and rivers. So certainly, look, our waters are really inviting and very welcoming, and part of who we are as Kiwis, it's part of our culture to play in the water, but at the same time they can be really unpredictable, really changeable, and as a result incredibly unforgiving, unfortunately.
Yeah. Water Safety NZ Chief Executive Jonty Mills. Thank you for your time, Jonty. It's It's a scenario, Stephen, that you wouldn't wish it upon anyone, would you? You know.
No, you certainly wouldn't. And a big shout out to John D. Mills and Water Safety New Zealand for the great work they're doing and raising awareness and education. And they need more support for that job. I once got into serious difficulty. My daughter and I one evening at Tolaga Bay on the east coast, a beautiful evening, warm water, but we chose to swim at the time the tide changed. We got carried out and had a hard job coming back
in. Is that
right? It was very much touch and go. And we can swim. We thought we were being careful, but we weren't.
What happened? How did you get carried out?
Well, we got back in by luck. I managed to pick up Hannah and my daughter and push her in on a wave, and I managed to struggle my way in. But a friend of ours who was a bit behind us, she was being dragged in the other direction. Mercifully, she had a boogie board, and she got picked up by a surfie. But anyway, all of this to say I'm very aware of this now. We thought we were prepared and we weren't. So I think the messages that Chanti's given us today are really the ones to be focused on. And it may take more government money, and the taxpayers' union probably won't like that either. But, these are things that are worth supporting.
Joe?
Yeah, I actually am quite surprised at the limited amount of public support there is, not just for sort of aquatic literacy, you know, because schools are so much less likely to have pools and they're not available to children, or there's a cost involved that is prohibitive to some people, but also to some of the life-saving services we rely on to keep us safe in the water. The fact that, you know, that we're not treating that as an essential emergency service. It's more that it's a nice to have. But at the same time, I would say, based on my understanding, the way the drowning statistics are, it's not necessarily about just learning to swim.
No.
You know,
no.
And I think that perhaps makes it sound a bit simpler than it is, because it is far more about people just wildly underestimating the risk and overestimating their own ability.
Yep.
And so that is about reading the water, not being stupid. I wonder if alcohol plays a role at times. You know, there are things like that which are perhaps a wider social problem.
Right. Yep.
28 past four, the panel, RNZ National. Now, a word on this. It's understood that Hannah Tamaki is going to appear on Dancing with the Stars. Tamaki, the wife of Destiny Church leader Brian Tamaki, is the leader of the recently formed Vision NZ that hopes to contest the general election this year. She cuts a controversial figure and announced in November that her party would ban new mosques, temples and other foreign buildings of worship. And along with her husband, she has been outspoken against the LGBTQ plus community. And according to the Tamakis, the Christchurch quakes that killed 185 people were caused by gay people. Now, social media users have jumped in, one saying that normalising and mainstreaming hate is not a good move. So what do you think, Joe? Is it acceptable in an election year to have the leader of a political party to get all this free airtime? Or is it been done before? Rodney Hyde, David Seymour?
There have certainly been some controversial figures on Dancing with the Stars, but I do think Hannah Tamaki is in somewhat of a different league. And I sort of take issue with this slightly ironic, we're doing it in a way that, you know, we're self-aware about it. You know, the position that in the event she is, in fact, a contestant on Dancing with the Stars, which at this stage is an internet rumour.
Yes.
I mean, because in the end, if you give someone a platform for their views, in the end, that
she's dancing.
You're endorsing them.
She's having a boogie. She's not been given a platform.
She's being normalised in a way that I don't think her views are the
normal
views.
She's a wild card in the show to get ratings. I mean, what do you think, Stephen?
There's nothing normal about Dancing with the Stars. I don't think it could be anything could be further from the truth. I mean, I don't happen to care for Destiny or Brian Tamaki or Hannah Tamaki. I think some of their speaking and teaching is hateful. But look, this is a sideshow. What we need to do is critique them to the stars. We need to vote them out. That's the way to get rid of them.
Joe?
I'm not sure what the ratings would be. Critique.
So you're
critique
saying,
to the stars.
Yes,
let's pitch it.
Yes, exactly.
You know? Stephen, you're saying protest with your voting.
Well, if that's really what you want to do personally, I think the whole thing's a sideshow. But you know, if you really dislike them, don't watch it. or use the finger on the button.
Final thought, Jo?
Well, I would go. I would take it a bit more seriously than that. I would feel that was a really dangerous position for a media organisation to take, and just not watching is not enough. I would be more in the camp that I would actively boycott any products that advertised in that space. I would seek to disengage from any other programs that are associated with that channel. And, I mean, I'm not saying that would be enough, but I would find that a hugely offensive position.
But I guess that's the point, isn't it? It's about activism for the people to take that in charge themselves, I think.
Right.
I do think we should be concerned about that.
Okay.
That teaching and
today we're with NZ editor of NZ Guardian Jo McCarroll and Stephen Jacoby, a business and trade commentator. Much to come on the panel. Time for headlines.